Hello and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Eloise Skinner and this webinar is an overview of the UK's new digital services tax. So I'm going to start with a general introduction to the tax and a bit of background, and then we'll move more into the basics of how the tax is put together, the different elements of the tax that you would have to meet to be within its scope, the mechanics of the tax, and then some thoughts about the future and some steps that businesses, so if you are a business or if your clients' businesses might be within the scope, some steps that you might want to consider now, some practical things to take away. So an introduction to the UK's new digital services tax. The digital services tax throughout this webinar is going to be referred to as the DST, although other countries also have named their digital services taxes sometimes similarly. So always, should be wary as to which one you're referring to, but in this webinar we'll refer to the UK's digital services tax as the DST. So the DST will apply to revenues earned from the 1st of April 2020. And to give a little bit of background, it reflects an international movement towards an updated structure of taxation for digital businesses and a response to the steady digitalization of the global economy. And a key intention of this transformation of the taxation systems around the world is to tax profits in the location where value is generated. This can be a little bit more complex where you have digital businesses because you may not be able to correctly identify where the value of the business is being generated, and you'll see some of those concerns being addressed in the form of the UK's digital services tax. To give a little bit of the international background as well, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, otherwise known as the OECD, continues to work to establish a global consensus on how digital taxation should be developed. However, even against that backdrop, the UK follows countries such as France and Italy in establishing some provisions to tackle the issues in the meantime. And we'll return to the work of the OECD and the work of different international jurisdictions at the end of this webinar. So this webinar assumes that the DST will be enacted in its current form when the Finance Bill 2020 receives royal assent. So moving on to the basics, this is slide 7. The DST is a 2% tax on the revenues of large businesses that provide certain digital services. The in-scope revenues must be derived from UK users, and I'll explain that requirement in a little bit more detail later in this webinar. There are three categories of service that fall within the scope of the UK's DST. The first is social media services. The second is internet search engine services. And the third is online marketplaces. Coming back to this requirement of a business to be a business is considered to be large if it has annual global revenues on a consolidated group basis of over £500 million, more than £25 million of which are attributable to UK sales. And to be within the scope of this tax, the relevant revenues must be those kind of in-scope revenues, so they meet those conditions that the tax sets out. There is an exemption or an exclusion for the first £25 million of revenues which are attributable to UK services. There is an alternative basis of charge for certain businesses that they may be able to utilize. And according to this alternative basis, the applicable rate of DST is based on the UK operating margin of the relevant activities of the business or of the group. So essentially where the business or group has an operating margin of zero, or it has a negative operating margin, so maybe it's a loss-making company, calculation of DST should be reduced accordingly. So this could be helpful for certain companies that may not be operating in the same way as others. Maybe they're making a loss, or maybe they're low margin companies, and they may be able to utilize this alternative basis of charge to give a more appropriate calculation of the tax. In terms of the mechanics, the DST must be paid within 9 months of the end of the relevant accounting period. So it is tied to an individual accounting period of a business. And the DST return itself must be submitted within 1 year. The service provided must be an online service. An HMRC guidance suggests that this in-scope online service should be a substantive business service by itself. So not just an ancillary or incidental service to another service, but something that comprises a service by itself. There is an example here which might be helpful to kind of crystallize this concept a little more. And this example involves the comments section of the online version of a newspaper. This would generally be considered to be ancillary to the provision of digital journalistic content. In many cases, the comments facility may have no distinct purpose, and the business may have no plans to develop or monetize this facility independently from its broader plan to expand the newspaper. This isn't the case in all comment sections of online newspapers, of course. It should be analyzed on a case-by-case basis, but this is a helpful concept to see which activities might be considered to be incidental to a broader activity. There is an example which kind of fits this description at this place in the manual that we've indicated on slide 10 in the HMRC guidance, and there are some other examples there as well of these kind of questions that might be helpful to take a look at. So returning to the example, where most users visit the website to consume the journalistic content and the opportunity to comment on articles is clearly a secondary driver, HMRC guidance considers that the comments facility is unlikely to be a separate service to the wider provision of the online newspaper. However, the online newspaper should consider whether its main business or any other business service that it provides meets any of the other relevant conditions, so it's not a kind of catch-all exemption, and should be assessed on a case-by-case basis. The online service must fall within one of the following three categories. This is slide 11. The first is social media services, and this category includes two conditions. The first is that the service has a main purpose of promoting interaction between users. And the second is that the service enables the sharing of user-generated content, and this must be a significant feature of the service. Category two is internet search engines. So no specific definition of an internet search engine is actually provided in the legislation itself, but the concept does generally exclude embedded search engines. So that might be a search engine that appears on the page but is run and controlled and utilized by a third-party provider. And where the website does contain this kind of embedded search engine, a search box which uses third-party technology to display results, the third-party provider is generally considered to be undertaking the relevant activity. Although, again, this is a facts and circumstances determination and should be analyzed on a case-by-case basis. The third and final category here is online marketplaces. And the conditions here involve that the marketplace must have a main purpose to facilitate the sale or hire of goods or services offered by users and will enable users to sell or advertise, even if the sale is then concluded on another platform. So even if those two users are brought together on the online marketplace but then conclude their sales somewhere else, that still may fall within the definition of the online marketplace. And again, it's helpful to refer back to HMRC guidance here, which does provide various considerations that might be useful in determining whether something is an online marketplace. There is an exclusion that applies for online financial marketplaces, which includes the trading of commodities, financial instruments, or foreign exchange. And this exclusion is something that has developed across the duration of the DSP's evolution. So it would be helpful to go to the guidance, and there is some provision and assistance on what this exclusion may encompass. But just to note here that trading includes the creation of instruments, and the provider of such online marketplaces need not be a regulated entity. So this may be a helpful exemption in some circumstances, although the term should be analysed carefully to make sure that it is the appropriate exemption to use. Revenues falling within scope will be taxable if they are A, attributed to one of those three categories that I've just spoken about, and you can see slide 5 for those three categories broken down again. And the second category B is if they are linked to UK user participation. Revenues from ancillary activities may be included, for example, payment fees for online marketplace sales. And advertising services also have some specific provisions to assist in their determination. So where advertising services are included within other in-scope activities or services, these services will be included within the calculation of the tax if the advertising services obtain a significant benefit from the digital service. So on slide 15, there is an example of how this might operate in practice. And again, the guidance is useful here to refer back to because there are some specific tangible examples that may help in conceptualizing what could be quite a difficult concept. So the example here is that a group operates a search engine and generates revenue by allowing businesses to pay it to display advertising against users' search results. It also enters into agreements with third-party websites to take control of their advertising space and auction this to other customers looking to display advertising across a range of websites. This activity would generally be considered to be an online advertising service. In this example, the search engine provider tracks user behavior across its own search website and across other third-party websites as well, and also offers businesses seeking to advertise a similar set of products to target adverts at users. So in this case, the advertising service will be generally considered to derive significant benefit from the search engine, and so may fall within the general scope of the tax. And again, this the guidance here and the link to the guidance that we provided on slide 15 may be useful. So to move on now to the concept of a UK user and the idea of attributing revenues to a UK user. Revenues must, of course, be attributable to UK users to fall within the scope of the DST, as we mentioned earlier. And a UK user is a user that can be reasonably assumed to be normally located or established in the UK, either an individual for the normally located element or a company for the establishment element. But note that the scope is not limited to UK incorporated companies or to UK permanent establishments, so it may be a little bit broader than those concepts as used in other ways. Each determination of whether a user is a UK user is considered to be a pragmatic test, and it's based on available information. So some examples of this might be a UK physical address or UK payment details. And the HMRC guidance does acknowledge that in some circumstances, a user's IP address may be helpful information, although again, there are some difficulties in using this as a completely determinative factor. It may just be the case that together with other information, it gives a conclusion that can be reasonably assumed to be correct, that the UK user is a UK user. Businesses should consider how to analyze and assess their user data to meet the relevant requirements, but they are only expected to use the evidence available to them to determine if it is reasonable to assume the relevant user is the UK user. So businesses do not have to go on a search expedition to find out the location of their users, but they should be using available data. And as we'll return to in the more practical steps element of this presentation, that might be something that businesses start to think about at this point, preparing themselves to analyze the data, or at least to consider which data may be available to determine if a user is a UK user. Revenues are generally considered to be attributable to UK users if they arise in connection with UK users. There are some specific rules that relate to online marketplaces and some other specific rules as well. And again, the legislation should be checked in detail. But in general, a just and reasonable apportionment is made. So coming on to the mechanics of the tax. The DSTs I mentioned right at the beginning of this presentation applies to relevant revenues where total group digital services revenues exceed £500 million and total UK digital services revenues exceed £25 million. And again, there's this allowance, this £25 million allowance, which applies to each accounting period for the first £25 million of UK taxable revenues. So the tax becomes calculated above that point. In theory, double taxation relief should be available, which should prevent double taxation from the application of an equivalent digital services tax in another jurisdiction. However, this is subject to conditions and limitations to certain circumstances. And so it shouldn't necessarily be assumed that double taxation relief will completely negate the application of the US, the UK DST, maybe if there's an equivalent in another jurisdiction. But it may be instead the case that only a certain percentage of the tax is alleviated by the application of this double taxation relief. So again, if it's something that may be relevant to your business or to your client's business, it's something that should be checked and analysed in each case. Returning to this idea of the alternative basis of charge, this may be helpful or applicable particularly to loss-making or low-margin companies, and it's sometimes referred to as the safe harbour. Eligible businesses may elect on an accounting period basis for the rate of charge of tax to be calculated according to their UK operating margin. It is possible for the election to be made against certain categories of revenue and not against others. And again, because it's made on an accounting period basis, it is something that may change over time. The DST is generally deductible as an allowable expense against UK corporation tax, but it is subject to the applicable rules for deductibility of expenses in general, which is that they are incurred wholly and exclusively for the purposes of the trade. HMRC's guidance acknowledges that a company's DST expense is in most cases directly related to the earnings of its revenues and is a legal obligation of performing that trade. So in most cases, according to HMRC guidance, it is likely that the expense will have been incurred wholly and exclusively for the purposes of the trade. But again, as with most of these things, it should be determined on a facts and circumstances basis. And in each case, the business should test that against the rules that apply to deductibility of expenses. There is no credit relief for DST against any other tax at the moment. Again, covering the mechanics of the tax, DST is payable annually, 9 months after the end of the relevant accounting period. DST liability is actually calculated at the level of the group, but it is chargeable on the individual companies within the group that recognise the relevant revenues. Groups can nominate a group company to deal with some administrative elements of the DST. So these could be things like notifying HMRC when the revenue threshold conditions are met for the first time, calculating the liability, and or submitting annual returns. If no such nomination is made, these responsibilities will by default fall to the ultimate parent of the group. The amount and the timing of the relevant revenues is determined from the consolidated group accounts as per the relevant accounting framework. This is the targeted anti-avoidance rule, otherwise known as the TAR. So this applies in order to counteract arrangements that have a main purpose of achieving a DST tax advantage. So the TAR applies to relevant anti-avoidance arrangements, and those have to meet a certain set of conditions. There is some helpful guidance again in the HMRC manuals on this, so it would be helpful if you feel like this is something that may be concerning to your business or to your client to double check the guidance and see exactly the conditions that are applicable. But in general, there must be an arrangement. A main purpose of the arrangement must be to enable a person to obtain a DST tax advantage. And the TAR will not apply when the obtaining of the tax advantage can reasonably be regarded as consistent with the principles and the policy objectives of the DST legislation. So the consequence of the TAR applying is that HMRC must counteract the arrangement by making such adjustments that are just and reasonable. So moving on to the future. So in terms of the UK government's approach to the DST, obviously there are international developments going on in parallel, and the UK government has stated that the DST will be disapplied when an appropriate global solution is enacted. So the relevant legislation right at the end of the legislation contains the requirement that the DST is reviewed before the end of 2025. So note that this is not an automatic disapplication procedure. The DST will not lapse by a certain point. There is just a requirement to review before a certain date. Meanwhile, the OECD intends to reach a multinational solution by the end of 2020. So this is even the case in the face of recent developments with the global pandemic. The OECD has indicated that it intends to continue with this timeline. And obviously, if that does take place, then that may affect the application of the DST this year or next year or in the years to come before 2025, when the legislation requires the DST to be reviewed. Moving to the US aspect, the US has generally resisted digital services taxation. So one example of this was a French digital services tax, which was introduced. And there was a trade dispute that resulted from the US's objection to that French digital services tax. So at the moment, France and Italy have both delayed collection of their digital services taxes. And the EU also did have its own proposal, which was developing a similar kind of digital services tax concept. But this has faced in the past and may continue to face some significant challenges from individual member states and as a whole, negotiating the proposal and bringing it into being. So what next? Here are a couple of practical steps that might be helpful for you to think about if your business may be affected by the UK's DST, or if one of your clients may be affected or interested. These are some practical points that you might think about taking. The first one is that businesses should assess whether they are likely to fall within the scope of the DST. So this will be a review of the legislation, a review of the guidance, a review of relevant revenue streams that are in force at the moment for individual businesses. And then comparison against the requirements of the DST to see whether they are likely to fall within the scope. If they are likely to fall within the scope of the DST, businesses should consider procedures and systems to assist with assessment, analysis of data, and calculation. So this is could be quite significant work, but I think the tax is now at a point where if it does come into force as is currently anticipated, there may be some administrative work from businesses required just to assess how they're going to collect the data and how they're going to use that data to figure out the requirements of the tax. So those could be things that would be helpful to think about before the tax is brought into force. Group companies should consider if it will be appropriate to nominate an entity to handle the administration of the DST. So as I mentioned earlier, there are a couple of aspects that could be delegated to a certain company within the group, and group companies should consider if it is appropriate to do that and which company it will be. And then finally, this is a more of a general point. International development should be monitored, including at global level. So seeing what different companies across, countries across the world are doing to address the challenges faced by the digitalization of the economy. As well as the specific proposals introduced by the OECD and the EU and their development over time. So that is the end of the webinar. I believe there will be a quiz to follow, but I hope you enjoyed it and I hope it was helpful. Thank you for joining.